Good morning and welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your co-host, Prentice Pemberton. Well, the developing brain depends on experience to wire itself, so the more a brain does a certain thing, the better it gets at doing that thing. The reward center of the brain is a powerful mechanism that works to reinforce behaviors that activate dopamine production, and the teen brain is wired to seek out new experiences. The makers of Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat, the pioneers of the new technology we face today, knew this and designed it to be as interactive and as immersive as possible. I want to start off today's show by reading an excerpt from an interview with Sean Parker, who is one of the founders of Facebook and has now since changed gears and is working in cancer immunotherapy. He says it's sort of a way to, I don't know, cleanse his soul from creating this stuff. In a recent interview, he said, when Facebook was getting going, I had these people who would come up to me and they would say, I'm not on social media. And I would say, oh, you know you will be. And they would say, no, no, I value my real life interactions. I value the moment. I value presence. I value intimacy. And I would say, we'll get you eventually. It literally changes your relationship with society, with each other. God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains. The thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them, was all about how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible. And that means we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while, because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post, it's going to get you to contribute more content, and that's going to get you more likes and comments. It's a social validation feedback loop. Exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with, because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology. The inventors, creators, it's me, it's Mark Zuckerberg, it's Kevin Systrom on Instagram, it's all of these people. We understood this consciously, and we did it anyway. So on today's edition of Line One, we're going to look at what the latest research says about technology and kids' health. And we'll discuss what we can do as parents and as a community to help our kids manage this storm. Today, I'm especially interested in your thoughts. Are you worried about any of this at all? Or is this just how it's going to be? And are we better off just kind of accepting it as the new way? Are we powerless to help our kids? Are we powerless to stop this technology storm that's sort of taking us over? Do you disagree and think it's all just a case of us not really understanding this new AI generation and getting all worked up about nothing? Is it our, you know, rock and roll? What are you doing with your children now? What have people tried that's not work? So please don't hesitate to call in. I'm here by myself. I don't have a guest today, so I will be talking for an hour unless folks decide they want to participate and call in and help me out here. We have a few emails that have come in that we'll get to. But this is a subject that I've been particularly onto for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. Because I see the negative impacts every day from the relationship that our kids have with technology, and the fact that I now have 3 daughters who are 8, 10, and 12 and are caught in the direct path of this storm. I am very much interested in how we help our kids figure this stuff out and navigate it. So I guess I forgot to give the phone numbers. It would probably help if I did that. Thank you, Dave. If you're in Anchorage, we can be reached at 550-8433. Anywhere outside of Anchorage, our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. If you have an email before, you got to spell out line one. That's line1@alaskapublic.org. Much of the research that I'll be talking about today has come from some of the connections I have through Screenagers, Dr. Rustin and Lisa Tabb, and also a great deal of it came from Jean Twenge, I believe that's how a doctor, she's a psychology professor, University of San Diego, has done lots of research on teens and technology. She's written a couple of books, iGeneration, or iGen is what it's called. That really looks at the impact of these devices and our kids' immersive technology. And I guess I should start off by talking about immersive technology. It's sort of a phrase that I've kind of coined. Maybe I didn't coin it, but I haven't seen other people using it a whole lot. I think of immersion as just getting inside of something, right? Of crawling into something. And immersive technology, Fortnite, used to be WoW, World of Warcraft, these kind of games for boys. We'll get into some of that a little bit later. But these kind of games, immersive technology, the Snapchat, Instagram, keeping your streaks alive, having to check in all the time, even when kids aren't on it, they're still connected to it. I talk to teachers and parents, smartphones in schools are an unneeded distraction that's very disruptive and leads to disconnection for kids. My 12-year-old is in middle school, and she doesn't necessarily like it when I tell stories about her, but as she jokes, I think she does like it. But she says everybody's on their phone at lunch, and each cell phone or each school makes their own cell phone policy. So I know it's different for different folks. So before I get into some of the research, we'll go to our first phone call of the day. We got Amelia, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Hey, Colin from Eagle River here. One thing that I've been noticing, I'm about 40, and I was heavily bullied, kindergarten through 12th grade. But when a bully bullied me, they had to come up to my face and say something or do something. They had to hit me or push me or call me a name. And when I went home, there was that reprieve. But yet, to do that, they had to physically confront me, look me in the eye, acknowledge me as a person, and then choose to hurt me. It's a lot easier nowadays for kids to just go online and say and hurt other children, bully them, without ever coming face-to-face to them. And the children that receive this bullying, they have no face to connect the bullying to, really, because it doesn't happen. They might see the child in school, but they don't, there isn't that physical interaction. And so I wonder, people talk a lot about access to guns in school shootings, but I don't think people are paying as much attention to just the disconnect that children feel. If you are being bullied heavily as a child and all this bullying is occurring during screen time, you are disconnected from those children at school. And I think it is much easier than to commit a school shooting, as it would be for me to, I had access to guns, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't literally take the life of another child because I knew them. I saw them every day. And yes, I was bullied, but I wonder if people are giving enough attention to the fact that this disconnect that social media is placing with all of us is contributing to the school shootings.
All right, Amelia, thanks very much for the call and the thoughts. I think you're 100% right. One of the things that, one of the studies that was done with screenagers that I had found was that 43% of teens aged 13 to 17 report being a victim of cyberbullying in the last year. A lot of this data is taken off the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. It's taken from some of the research projects done by Dr. Twenge and Dr. Rustin, among other things, and most of it can be found on the website. But 43%, and yes, cyberbullying, it makes it very impersonal. You don't have to come up, as you pointed out, and say it to somebody's face. You can simply send a picture or a comment, and you can also send it out to all of your friends. That's the other part. It just can make it exponentially bigger really, really quickly. So, Amelia, that's a really good point. Bullying is different today than it used to be.
I find that it is, and that's just it. And also the connection, you know. I was bullied pretty badly, physical, you know, you name it. But I wanted to hurt. I wanted to hit. I wanted to, but I couldn't, because I'd look at them and I'd know that they were people, and I know that they were I just couldn't bring myself to hurt another person. But, you know, these kids now that get bullied at school, even then it's cyberbullying from what I hear. I have no children. And then they go home and the cyberbullying continues. And a lot of them, they find their outlets, from what I hear, in social or, you know, video games, online, more online things, which disconnects them further from their peers. I had to go to school, and not everybody bullied me. Most people were neutral. And, yeah, you know, it's just that the disconnect is what I kind of worry about for this generation of children.
Yeah, one of the things you mentioned that's really important also is that technology also for kids who do get bullied, I mean, it and who have some social anxiety already, it can be an escape and a dissociative experience, and kids can get into this immersive technology. And you're also, you make another good point that kids can't get away from the bullying these days. If we're talking about bullying, they don't get a break when they come home, because then it's just going to their friends, and they have to see about it on Snapchat, and they have to see about it on Instagram, or pictures are shared with people. They can't get away from it at home. It's never at night. The number of kids that are sleeping with their phones in their rooms is remarkable. So I appreciate your phone call and the thoughts, Amelia. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks.
All right. If you think about it, it's remarkable that every time I say this, it sort of stuns me again. The iPhone came out in 2007. That's 11 years ago. The iPad in 2010. By 2012, 50% of Americans had smartphones. And today, teen ownership of smartphones is pushing 80%. So in 10, 11 years, it's like the landscape of childhood and parenting has shifted, the way that we access information. Generation before sort of had access to the internet, and we had, you know, but we had to go to a laptop or a desktop computer in our home, and sort of, you know, like the old people used to lament having to sit on a wired phone, those things. But in just 11 years, from 2007 to 2018, it's changed everything. And one of the things that that Dr. Twenge points out, University of San Diego professor, she's conducted numerous studies on the impact of technology in kids. And I want to talk a little bit about some of her research and what she's found. Using data collected between 2010 and 2015 from more than 500,000 adolescents nationwide, Twenge's study found that kids who spent 3 or more hours a day on smartphones or other electronic devices were 34% more likely to suffer at least one suicide-related outcome, including feeling hopeless or seriously considering suicide. That's versus kids who use devices 2 hours or less a day. Among kids who use electronic devices 5 or more hours a day, 48% had at least one suicide-related outcome, meaning some verbal conversation or saying a suicidal ideation, thoughts of being hopeless and helpless. That is almost half of kids who did 5 hours or more. The alarming statistic that goes with that is the average amount of time that a young person spends connected to screens, including smartphones, is about 6.5 hours. That's the average. So if the average is 6.5 hours, that means a lot more using more than that. And I can tell you from my experience in my office that over and over again, the two biggest problems I face are technology, meaning the immersive technology, the smartphones, Instagram, the apps, and marijuana use is the other big one. So those are just a couple of statistics. In just the 5 years between 2010 and 2015, and remember, the iPhone came out in 2007, the iPad in 2010, and then really from 10 to 2015, which coincides with this jump in mental health problems for teenagers, is when kids really started to get a hold and get ahead of us with this cell phone idea. So between 2010 and 2015, the number of U.S. teens who felt useless and joyless, so the classic symptoms of depression, surged 33% in national surveys. Teen suicide attempts increased 23%. And even more troubling, the number of 13 to 18-year-olds who committed suicide jumped by 31%. That's between 2010 and 2015. The CDC has also noted a rise in rates of depression and anxiety over the years 2010 to 2015, and found that girls are at particular risk. Their suicide rate rose by 65% in those 5 years. And the number of girls who reported with severe depression rose by 58%. Again, some big numbers by the CDC talking about an increase. Now, is it causative? Is it correlative? I don't know. The research is still pretty early because we have this new generation. But I think the more that we look at these numbers and the timing that comes out, the timing of it, it seems to be a fairly strong link. Conversely, teens who spent more time doing sports, homework, socializing with friends in real life, and going to church had a lower risk for both depression and suicide. Another study looked at the brains of teens who fell into the category of smartphone or internet addiction. Now, internet addiction, smartphone addiction is something that is kind of thrown around a lot. You know, there's a debate on the behavioral addiction versus a chemical addiction, but kids report all the time, I'm addicted to it, I can't do it. The sense of panic that they have when they don't have their phone, the grumpiness when you take it away, irritability, this need, you know, kids screaming at their parents, I need my phone. This stuff is, it's all indicative of addictive sort of behavior. So the authors of that study found that some differences in chemistry in the reward circuits of the brain, particularly in the ratio of the neurotransmitter GABA to other neurotransmitter. Interestingly, when the teens went through CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy for their addictive behavior, their brain chemistry changed and looked more like non-addicted controls in that study. So there's a lot of evidence indicating that this stuff changes how our brains work. And we'll go ahead and get into a little bit more of what Daniel Siegel's, how his research applies to this stuff when we get back from the break. But right now we're going to go, we've got a couple minutes for a break, so we'll go to the phones again. Justin, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. As you had said, in 2007 was when the iPhone 3 came out. And usage rates, you know, took off exponentially from there. My biggest observation is that parents and role models for those people who are coming of age in that time have seen their parents and other adults spend more and more FaceTime. In 2003, people who were deemed, you know, necessary, either medical professionals or other avenues, carried pagers, and those pagers would go off and they would be in a nuisance, but many people did not happen to have those in our daily lives. And as work and as the constraints of a job and being available or on call or those kind of things require parents and such to use social media, whether it be WhatsApp or LinkedIn or anything else, they're using these social networks, and it's bleeding into personal personal time, personal family time. And I think that, you know, as parents, we are role models for our kids. They see and they mimic what we do, and it's very hypocritical for parents to address, you know, monitoring screen time, limiting access. Well, I think that is important. I think it's more important for us to demonstrate and exercise restraint in our own lives. Thank you.
Justin, that's a great call. And to your point, we're all vulnerable to this stuff. I know people have deleted their Facebook apps as grown-ups. We just get disenfranchised and upset with ourselves because we just keep going into this social media storm and getting sucked into it. So you're right. Oh, modeling is super important. I had this conversation with a parent the other day, and she was talking about how her kid doesn't get off his screen and brush his teeth and go to bed, and she really wants him to, you know, not be so stuck on his screen time. And I asked her what she's doing while he's on his screen time. She said watching TV or, you know, on her phone. So yes, to your point, modeling is super important. So I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. For those of you who might be tuning in late, we're building on last week's topic of cell phones in middle schools and taking a look at the overall emotional and physical health impacts of immersive technology on our youth. Today, I'm especially interested in hearing your thoughts on kids and the impacts of technology on their wellness. After this short break, I'll give you out our contact information, so have something handy to write with. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, your health connection.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org. Lead is bad for the health of Alaskans, especially for young children. It affects developing brains, so even small amounts are unsafe. Lead can be hiding in older paint, workplaces, ammunition, fishing weights, aviation gas, and marine paint. If you think you or your child has been exposed, ask a healthcare provider about testing. Get the lead out, Alaska. Learn more at leadfree.dhss.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, we are building on last week's topic of cell phones in middle schools and taking a look at the overall emotional and physical health impacts of immersive technology on our youth. I'm particularly interested in your questions or comments about today's topic. What are your thoughts about cell phone use for your kids? What do you do at your house? What works? What hasn't worked? How do you do with your own cell phone usage and with immersive technology, and your modeling? So, just about everybody that we talk to says that more limits are better for kids. And so I'm interested, again, what are your thoughts? What are your experiences? What have you done to limit your child's, exposure to some of this technology and some of the dangers? You can email your questions or comments to line1@alaskapublic.org, and I'll read your question on the air if we have time. Or you can call us locally at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or you can reach us toll-free. That's an Anchorage number. You can reach us toll-free anywhere outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752. All right. I guess we'll go ahead and Gunner from Fairbanks is calling in with some information on CDC studies. Go ahead. You're on line one. Gunner may not be there. Oh, Gunnar. Gunnar, are you there?
Hello. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Thanks.
All right.
Go ahead.
Okay, so thanks for taking my call. So it's not so much that I have information on the CDC. I was just wondering, since the CDC has come out with these studies, have they also come out with guidelines? Because I know that CDC loves to put guidelines out there, and they're really good at it.
Right.
So that's one question. And my comment is that, so I also have a teenager who is in this storm. And what I have done, what I found when she, you know, so she would get into this pattern of sneaking her phone at night. She wasn't allowed to have it,
right,
you know, when she went to bed, but then she would sneak it. And so I really felt that it was unfair, in a sense, for her to fight that storm alone. So I would just remove the cell phone. and put it by my bed to charge at night. And that seemed to really work well. And what's happened, I think, is just she found a friend who loves to read and in school. And they are total book nerds now. And she has really shifted in a big way from being stuck on screen. She still has her iPhone. She still uses it. But she's much, much more interested in reading now. And I feel really blessed about that. And I think it is, speaks to sort of like how attractive the social engagement can be and how powerful it is if they find the right friend. And then I'll take my your comments offline.
All right, Gunnar, thanks. Appreciate the comments. Those are really good points. There was a study done by Dr. Rustin, the Screenagers filmmaker, and it was featured on, I think it was 60 Minutes or 2020, and I don't have that in front of me. But one of the things that the experiment was, they gave kids their devices unchecked with no rules for, I believe it was a 48-hour period, and they looked at the usage of device time. And like the kids just consumed and consumed and consumed, some of them 40 hours out of the 48 hours, 28 hours. And one of the things that, you know, when they talked to the kids and the parents afterwards, it was the kids were like, I'm so thankful that my parents have some restrictions on this. And much of the research, much of the information, the recommendations from CDC, I'll go over a little bit of that, what parents can do at the end of the show to support their kids. But yes, it talks about taking that responsibility from them. If we think about the adolescent brain and some of the stuff that I mentioned and what it's wired for is like seeking out new information, seeking out distraction, pleasure, novelty, you know, where kids are very susceptible to eating lots of sugar, staying up late, acting impulsively. I mean, the frontal lobe in the adolescent brain is not fully developed until, you know, 26, 27 years old. So that's the decision-making and the critical thinking part of the brain. And so what we have is, you know, these kids that are given this just open, you can just keep refreshing and refreshing and refreshing and downloading information and distraction, and they can immerse themselves for hours and hours into these into games like Fortnite and World of Warcraft and Instagram, social media. The kids that are watching YouTube, watching other kids play on YouTube for hours and hours and hours, they're not even playing the game, they're just watching it. So that contributes to more isolation socially. And we talked about kids being more disconnected. Rates of depression and anxiety are going up. So, yes, it is so important that we as parents, as you said, take that choice away. Take that challenge away from your daughter. Help her navigate that by just saying, I take your cell phone at night. I said to my daughter the other day, I said, sweetie, I want to help you not have to deal with this. And you know, she says, I go to my friends' houses and it gets uncomfortable because I'm the only one without a phone. So there's lots of things. It's complicated and it's hard for parents. I'm having a hard time saying no. And this is something I believe strongly. But, you know, if we just give in because everybody's doing it, I think that's a mistake. So we're getting some phone calls, so we're going to go ahead. I think it's Lydia. You're on line one. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a topic that I'm pretty passionate about, and it started with myself because you were saying before the – can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Go ahead.
Okay. It's a subject I'm pretty passionate about that I started – it started with myself because you were saying before – how we kind of get sucked into the storm and we have to be role models. And I found myself being frustrated with other people's opinions or the news or other things that I wouldn't have known about if I wasn't sitting on my phone. So I did delete my Facebook app and my news apps. And it was remarkable how my attitude just improved.
Yeah.
And that reflected, I have young kids, but I also worked in the school district. It proved my kids behavior and their expectations. We got outside. I'm trying to immerse them in the running world with the running groups around town or hiking. Because when I worked in the elementary school and middle school with the middle school age kids, the amount of topics that surrounded technology blew my mind. And I'm afraid for that for my kids, that with their parents, they might have a susceptibility to depression. And I want to keep them away from that as much as possible, because it's taking over their brains and time. So I just think that it's a really great idea to limit it as much as possible with whatever information we have.
Yeah, those are great points. And I think limiting it and really like having some, how do you limit it? How do you take these things from your kids when they have them? How did they get ahead of us with this whole cell phone thing? And I think those are really good questions. But yeah, I think you're right. The schools, everybody I talk to, teachers, counselors, parents, everybody says that their kids they want their kids to use less screen time. And I don't believe that as a group they will use less screen time unless we model it and we enforce it and set up times that are just device free. So I appreciate your call, Lydia.
Thank you very much.
All right, let's keep going with the phone calls. We have Kim, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I taught in the public school system for 25 years out in Palmer. I'm recently retired.
Great.
And
when did you retire?
I just did.
Okay. You've seen it.
I've seen it. I started teaching in 1993, and I just retired in 2018. And I taught 12 and 13-year-olds for that period of time. And I want to thank you for emphasizing that parents should be good role models. It's amazing how many times I've talked to parents, and the parents have, at least they seem to have no idea how much time their kids are spending on screen time, whether it be social media, whether it be television. And they say, well, what do you mean my kid's falling asleep in class every day? I put him to bed at 10 o'clock.
Right.
And I said, yes, but he also tells me that he was up until 3 in the morning watching TV in his room or playing video games in his room. No, that can't be. it's total surprise. Really? So I have seen, as you say, it is a correlation, not enough studies to really say cause and effect, but I have seen a huge, huge increase in the amount of my students who were treated for depression over the years.
Right.
And I also saw a huge increase in their impatience, their unwillingness to spend time to figure something out on their own. And an increase in social isolation, which seems counterintuitive as they're spending so much time on Facebook or social media. But I've seen kids walk down the hall side by side with each other, and they're not talking to each other. They're texting each other on their phones. That's their conversation. So this sense of isolation. Yes, that's just a few things that I've seen. I'm a little bit concerned also about the increase even in using computers for education.
Yeah.
That is screen time. Educational screen time, yes, but it does not give teenagers a chance to listen to each other. I mean, really listen to each other and respond to what the other person is saying. They're in their own little bubble. So that concerns me as well.
Or to have like real conversations with people. I mean, we're finding out that one of the things that Dr. Twenge said was that, you know, 18-year-olds are more like are more like 15-year-olds now, and 15-year-olds are more like 12-year-olds. One of the interesting things was that our kids are safer today physically than they've ever been because they're at home in their room on their phones. They're driving later. And this is the first generation where we have to like encourage our children to go get their driver's license. I can't have the number of times I've had that conversation. Kids are like, I don't need to drive. because they have this artificial connection. So let me ask you, Kim, what was the policy in your school for cell phones?
Well, the policy is that students are allowed to have them in class as long as they are turned off, unless the teacher asks the students to get on their cell phones to use them to look something up, for example.
So it's the bring your own device policy. Pull it out when the teacher says pull it out.
That's the policy. However, there was also some encouragement for kids to bring their cell phones into class and use them to look something up, for example, or to take a quick survey.
Right.
But what I found is that the kids had them on all the time, and even though one can be pretty good at spotting when kids are texting, looking down, but in a class of 30, 32 kids, you don't always catch them, and it's amazing how many times my kids would come up to me, 12, 13-year-old, and say, I have to step out in the hall. I have to answer this text. My parents just texted me. I have to answer it now.
Right.
And my response would be, but your parents aren't supposed to be texting you. They need to call the office so that the office is aware of what's going on. And then if there's an emergency, the office will contact me. I will contact you. You know, we'll get you in contact with your parents. But your parents should not be texting you during class. And they say, but it's a number. I said, all right, step out in the hall. And then I say, so what was the emergency? Oh, she just wanted to know whether or not I was going to be going to your place after school today. And it's that parents so irresponsible texting their kids during class. Oh, my goodness.
Well, the teachers tell me that the parents are often the number one culprit of texting their kids to say, pick up milk, or, you know, I'm going to be 5 minutes late, or, you know, whatever it is throughout the day. And parents really like the feature of being able to get in touch with their kids. But so back to kids having their cell phones. How do you, as a teacher, this is what I hear from teachers all the time, it's very difficult for them to police that. And many of them have kind of given it up because they're not going to fight. Parents get mad when they take their kids' phones. Teachers just don't want to battle it. Is that what you've kind of found? Teachers kind of threw up their hands because they're not getting support from parents or administrators?
We had good support from administration.
Okay.
If we caught a kiddo on a cell phone when he or she was not supposed to be, the first time I would just take it, put it on my desk. You can pick it up at the end of class. The second time, then we would all bring it down to the office, and the student had to go down and pick it up from the office. And then it was entered in the computer. There was a record that this child has had his or her cell phone taken away from a teacher and brought down to the office. The third time, then, the child may not pick it up. The parent has to come and pick it up.
Okay.
And, yes, parents were obviously very angry at having to come pick up a cell phone, but it was the administration that took the heat, not the teacher, for which we are extremely grateful.
Yeah, it is a challenge. Are you finding that the majority of teachers would prefer, like, that you know would prefer to not have cell phones, like, to have them put away for the day?
I don't know that it was the majority. A lot of teachers were very satisfied with simply saying, my policy is, I know you all have a cell phone in your pocket. Take it out, turn it off, put it face down on your desk. Some teachers really liked that policy, but there could be kids who would reach out and grab another kid's cell phone, for example. It's kind of like for me wearing the hat. You know, we'd have a hat day. Pay a dollar, you get to wear your hat. And the reason why we don't have hats, aside from it being customary courtesy not to wear hats inside, is the fact that kids grab them off each other's heads. Well, right. The same thing happens with the cell phones. So for me personally, that policy didn't work. But I'm glad that they also, the administration, left it up to some autonomy within the classroom about how teachers wanted to handle it, whether it's on your desk face down or in your pocket. If I see it, I take it. But we did have a school-wide policy about giving it to the office a second time.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Kim. I appreciate your call, and I appreciate your comments and thoughts.
And likewise, thank you for your program.
All right. If you're just joining us, we are building on last week's topic of cell phones in middle schools and taking a look at the overall emotional and physical health impacts of immersive technology on our youth. Particularly interested in your questions or comments about today's topic, so don't hesitate to call in and share your thoughts or experiences. Our number in Anchorage is 550-8433. You can reach us toll-free outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752. And you can email us with your questions or comments at line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll continue our conversation about kids and cell phones. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection.
Funding for Line 1, Your Health Connection was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. For those of you who might just be joining us, we're building on last week's topic of cell phones in middle schools, taking a look at the overall emotional and physical health impacts of immersive technology on our youth. If you have a question or a comment, please go ahead and give us a call in the next 10, 15 minutes or so we can get you on the air, or you can email us. You can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Our local phone number is 550-8433, toll free at 1-888-353-5752. Okay. I want to go ahead and read a email that I just got in from Jim. He says, "When I leave my quote-unquote dumb cell phone behind, I have discovered I have a completely different depth of ability to connect with other people. When I go out to a dance club where live music and live women are, I am 72. That's a great email. But yes, the ability to connect with other people, real connection, face-to-face time, this sort of FaceTime is no substitute for face-to-face time. So it looks like we are getting quite a few calls here, so we'll probably, as soon as Dave gets a moment, go to some phone calls. I do want to build, I have a little bit more on Dr. Twinge, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, but if I'm not, I apologize. But the research and her research and what is a healthy amount, I do want to talk a little bit about what's a healthy amount of smartphone use. But she says that young people who don't use smartphones or social media are all less well-adjusted than teens who use them a little. So the message there is that kids do need some connection. You know, one of the complaints I hear is that there's all this isolation with kids who don't have the ability to connect with their friends, and the medium has shifted. So there is some truth to that. It requires some digital media use to really socialize these days, it seems like. And that's one of the things that I'm finding is the phone numbers. And Maren's getting people asking for her Instagram, and she says, "I don't have one." But they say that the maximum mental health benefit of technology use peaks at about, or you know, the immersive sort of technology peaks at about an hour a day, an hour to 2 hours a day of device use. And then as you go to 2 and 3 and 4 hours, you get more and more mental health problems, anxiety, depressive disorders, and the impacts are start to be negative after only 2 hours. So it really is important that we as parents monitor our kids' phone use and speak clearly to them, have clearly limits and model it as well. Clear limits and model it as well. I think we're going to go ahead and get to some phone calls because we got quite a few lined up. So, Crystal, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Well, I taught at college level, and it was unnerving to be in the middle of a lecture, and the students were looking up what I was talking about to verify whether or not I was correct.
So they're fact-checking you as you are speaking?
Yes.
And was it, I mean, as a college teacher, you are seeing new young adults coming in. Are they distracted? Are the devices a distraction in your college classes even?
Absolutely. And if they get a phone call, they usually they don't even say anything. They just get up and walk out and they'll motion to me like, I'll be back later sort of thing.
Yeah, they have something more important to do.
Exactly. And when I would mark them absent for the time they were out, they would come in and say, but I was in the building, yes, but you weren't in class, were you?
Right. All right. So it's spreading into the college ranks as well. I think employers are having a problem with this as well. So I appreciate the phone call and the insight.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Jeanette. You're on line one. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi.
Hey.
So I serve as a first sergeant in the military, and so anything I say is not a military opinion. I'm just saying it as a background. My job involves a lot of interaction with the enlisted people. So I see a lot of kids that are just coming from their home life. They've just come out of their basic training in tech school. So I get a really good opportunity to see how well they readjust to a time where they're basically separated from their phones. And it's really interesting.
Fascinating,
to
yeah.
Sort of look and see some of the ways they cope. And the first biggest thing is, I call it the defaulting mechanism. So they, you know, we have strict rules about when they can use it, when they can't. But in the general open situation, they go back to their break rooms or whatever during whatever. And they tend to just default to the screens when they're not actively interacting.
Right.
And so a lot of times I'll address it to them and I'll say, do you realize when I'm not giving you something to do, your number one way of responding is just to go back to your phone? And I'll go to them and I'll say, so, you know, you're developing a military career. Is there any other way you might want to respond to a life that's going to be filled with opportunity other than just going to your phone? Because you're missing out on a lot. And then a lot of times I'll plug them into stuff so that they can kind of realize that they're doing it, because they really don't know that they're defaulting back to their screen. But I also will have them observe other people, and I'll say, do you see how often people fall out of reality and fall back into their screens? And that's helpful to them as well.
Yeah.
Because then they go, oh, gosh, I didn't know I was doing that. The other thing I've noticed is I have a lot of problems with those people who are really deep into their screen time. They don't interact normally. They tend to have problems with interjecting compulsively. They tend to spit back what they hear almost repetitively as if they were reading something off a screen. So I have to teach them to say my name or their name, or to say, you just talked to somebody and you came back and told me what they said. I need you to stop and say, what was that person's name? Visualize their face and then talk back to me about what that person said, because they don't seem to do that naturally. It's more like they just launch right into blah, 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 blah. So I've noticed that as well. I've noticed that there seems to be different settings. Like, sometimes there'll be people who go straight to Facebook. There'll be other groups that will socialize quite well, but they'll go to sharing, say, videos. So they'll sit around and they'll say, oh, they're sharing it. So there's different levels of socializing. And then I've noticed that in terms of those people that have the hardest time adjusting to the social requirements of the military, the ones that really, really just tend to go right into their social media and they don't, they don't interact. They're not really interacting with people. They're just looking at things.
No, it's not real interactions. I call it comparing everybody else's outsides to your insides, and you're just scrolling through things. And I got a bunch of phone calls lined up. I appreciate your perspective on the kids coming out into the military. It's probably really interesting to see the shift they're having to rewire their brains.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And yet I do see that they can do it, even when they've been at it for a while. But you do have to really get in and model, you know, be a good model, and two, to give them other opportunities,
right?
Really give them other options, and they respond very well.
All right, thank you, Jeanette. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Dory. You're on line one. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling from Sitka.
Hey, welcome.
I think there's one thing that's really being missed, and that's the modeling that parents do. The saddest thing I see, weekly at least, in the grocery store, and I'm a retired teacher, I see four-year-olds, five-year-olds, six-year-olds tugging on their mom's arm. She's got her cell phone to her ear, and she's just waving them away.
Yeah.
How do you teach kids if you don't model it yourself? Teachers can't do everything.
No, no. So we need...
Parents need to stop and examine. I've been so tempted to just grab a cell phone out of a parent's hand and throw it the length of the store.
Say, pay attention to your kid.
Pay attention to your kid. But thanks. Great two programs.
All right.
Last week and this week. So.
Thank you, Dory. Appreciate it. Let's keep going with the phone calls. Karen, I think this is a message that everybody probably needs to hear right now. Go ahead.
Oh, good morning. I'm the bad grandma.
All right.
My 13-year-old granddaughter traveled across the country to go to a special camp for kids ages 10 to 18 with a particular neuropathy that she has. And all the information said, no cell phones allowed. Please keep your kid from bringing your cell phone to camp. Well, my kids, her parents, said, Grandma, you must make sure she doesn't take her cell phone to camp.
Right.
I said, Granddaughter, take your cell phone to camp, just don't use it unless you absolutely need to, and that means do not text your friends back home. Well, when I picked her up, I asked her, did you exchange addresses with other kids? She's from San Diego, never met anybody with the same condition she has. And here are 80 kids and counselors and nurses that all have it. And she looked at me with this blank look. Addresses?
What? Yeah.
And what's that? I said, you know, so you can write to people. She said, no, no, Grandma. We're all on a group text.
Yeah.
And they were all on a group text. And on the way home, the 2 days traveling home, she was so happy to be reporting who was home, who was somewhere else, these new friends that she'd made. Now, I think there must be some common ground because possibly she was texting her friends at camp, and that wasn't very good.
Right.
I don't know. But maybe the camp could say, bring your phones to camp, but we will keep them until the last night of camp, the big social, the dance, or whatever it is. And then you can have your phones so you can exchange information, because that's how they stay connected to each other, with their phones.
That's a really good point. And, you know, we mentioned that earlier, the importance of these cell phones for social connectivity and how it's moving in that direction. And can we find some balance there is what you're talking about. And I hear, you know, schools are having a difficult time on field trips with cell phones because they're coming out and inappropriate things are happening. Kids are staying up all night on it. So many of the schools want to go to cell phone free field trips. But then you have the same, you know, that's the question. How do they, I guess they could write down their friend's cell phone numbers, but you're right. Like somebody's address, write a letter. Those are things that are changing. And, you know, we can't just be what is it, dinosaurs trying to explain mammals. We can't stick with that. We have to be creative in how we support these technological changes and advances, but also find some balance for our kids and some time unplugged so that neural connections and creativity and, you know, joy can kind of bloom and foster, because the research all indicates that kids who spend excessive amounts of time immersed in technology are not as happy as those that don't.
Thank you so much for keeping this conversation going. I really appreciate the show today.
Thanks, Karen. We got time for one more quick phone call. Tim, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. I'm down in Juneau, and mine's the other end of the spectrum. I've got an 80-year-old neighbor who we had over for dinner the other night, and she is so addicted to her phone that she cannot have it out of her hand. And it's just texts and Facebook. Oh, Dougie's having chicken for dinner. And it got to the extent that she could not eat her steak dinner because she couldn't put the phone down and cut it. So finally, I said, why don't you eat some steak? And when she put the phone down, I took the phone away and put it on the counter. I said, let's just talk and eat. And she sat there and looked at me and tried eating, and her face started to quiver and her hands started to shake. And the phone would beep that she got a text. And she goes, oh, Lord, oh, Lord.
She just couldn't put it down, huh?
Yeah. And she's like this. So any suggestions on how to deal with somebody like that?
Well, I don't know. It sounds like more interactions with her. She sounds like, you know, some of this technology is good because it does connect people and it keeps them engaged. And there's certain situations where it opens up, you know, social connectivity. And so it's not all bad. And I don't want to give that message. But yeah, it sounds like just spending time with her and going out and walks and engaging in some sort of active, you know, like play with your kids or play a game, see if she'll engage in that. But that's fun because adults are certainly not immune to this stuff either. And people who are, you know, depressed or anxious socially, they can get, or isolated socially, they get immersed into that world and it's an easy out. So that's a great question, Tim. And it's not just kids that we're talking about. So I appreciate the call.
All right. Thanks. Have a good day.
All right, I guess we're just about out of time. We only got a couple minutes left, so I will we'll sort of ramp it down here. I do have one email. It said, early in the broadcast, you mentioned a problem with teens playing Fortnite, but didn't explain why that's a problem. Could you elaborate what the problem are with teens playing the game? I haven't done a lot of research into Fortnite itself. I do know what my experience of it is the number of parents that are coming into my office and saying that their kids are spending hours and hours. It's a game that builds on itself and it doesn't have an end. And you create things and connect with other people. And it's very, very immersive in that sense. And so that's what parents are saying. They can't get their kids off of Fortnite and kids are talking about it. So again, it's balance, I think really is the key. All right, so time to wrap it up. Thanks. Appreciate you spending the hour with me today on line one. If you want to read more about today's conversation, posted lots of resources, links. You can find out all sorts of stuff on alaskapublic.org. Just click on the link to today's show. That's line one. And you can find all that information. Next week, Dr. Jay Butler returns for a discussion about childhood trauma and resilience with Dr. Kathy Baldwin Johnson. So be sure to tune in for that discussion next Wednesday, September 19th at 10, repeating at 8 on FM 91.1 Alaska Public Media. Eric Bork did our web editing for today's show, and Dave Waldron was our audio engineer. Thanks for taking the time to join me today on Line 1. Till next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.